Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize. I'm a pediatric speech-language pathologist, and I help babies, toddlers, preschoolers, and their parents learn how to understand and use language. If you're joining us from my website, you already know about this, but if you're joining us from iTunes or Blog Talk Radio site, I want to tell you that you can find all the information that we'll talk about today on my website at teachmetotalk.com. And so I guess we'll just get started with our show today. If you are joining us live, it's Friday, August 22nd at 1 o'clock, and we would love to have you call in. Our toll-free call-in number is 718-766-4332, and again, we would love to hear from you with any questions you have about teaching your late-talking children to communicate. But this is not just Teach Me to Talk with Laura, it's Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. So, Kate, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Laura.
Hi. You're on the road again today, huh?
On the road again. You must think I go somewhere. Well, lately I do go somewhere. I just dropped off my second daughter, youngest child, to Indiana University. So go Hoosiers. It's official. We're empty nesters.
Oh, anyway, are you crying? Are you crying or celebrating today?
No, I'm I have mixed emotions. I told her I'm happy for her and kind of sad for myself, but well, that's the way it goes. Anyway, I think it's my turn to say who I am, right?
That's your turn. Go ahead. That's your cue.
Okay. Well, my name is Kate Hensler, and I am called a developmental interventionist, and I work for the state of Kentucky in their early intervention program that we call First Steps in Kentucky. And I have a degree in nursing and a master's degree in early childhood education, and I basically work on cognitive skills, communication skills, and social-emotional skills. So I see a similar population with Laura, although she may see kids for just speech. She may be on a team with a DI if a child has additional delays or issues. So that's who I am.
All right. Well, thanks for telling us about that. Today we're going to kind of continue what we started over the last couple of weeks, which is talking about strategies that parents can use at home to help their late-talking children learn to talk. We've talked about playfulness. We've talked about sign language. And today we're really going to talk about learning to imitate words. And sometimes I don't think we can even start with imitating words with kids. And I think you'll agree with this too, Kate. Sometimes kids just don't get that whole imitation piece. So you have to back up and start with something that they might be able to imitate, which is that's going to be easier for them.
Mm-hmm.
So you might try to
say, something else.
Oh, that's okay. I'm totally distracted. I'm shuffling papers. I'm looking at the switchboard. Sorry, I got to get on track here. I'm sorry. Here we go. Okay, so sometimes it's going to be easier to teach your kids how to learn to imitate, not starting with words and not even starting with sounds. You might start with imitating movements or imitating gestures. And the first one that I usually start with is seeing if a kid will clap with me when I'm saying, yay! And having them clap. Do you try that one too, Kate?
I do. I don't know that I specifically target it as, I'm going to see if I can get this job. I think I may do gimme five more than I do yay as far as getting them to respond to a gesture that I make. I do yay, but I don't know that I think about, I'm going to see if I can get them to clap, although I think it's probably a good idea, and I'm going to try and make myself be better about it.
Well, that's one of the first ones that I do. But other things that I've tried with kids is just really imitating what they are doing already, imitating an action that they're already performing. Say we're looking out the window and they start to pat the window, I might try to pat the window after them and see if we can turn that into a little turn-taking game. Or another one that I do a lot is a fake cough, because lots of babies will start to do that at 8 or 9 months. So if even if I don't hear the kid cough, I might do a little fake cough and then look at him like, let's see if you're going to copy me doing this. That's another one that I might try to do too. Or any
they
other move.
They like that one. They find that one funny, I find. I do it with, if I have a baby doll, or I'll do it myself. Sometimes I'll put a Kleenex on top of my face and blow it off when I'm coughing,
yeah.
and they think, that's a good one. That gets them.
That's a good one. Yeah, that is a good one. I do a fake sneeze sometimes, too, the ha-ha-ha-ha-choo, and kids think that is really funny all the time. And that's also another good kind of distracting thing, too, that if I've gotten a kid that if they can't really imitate a word, even if we're kind of beyond that and we're working on the word phase and they are just totally getting frustrated, or if I can't keep their attention, I might do one of those silly things to kind of bring it back and get them imitating me that way and then move on to do a harder, something harder like a word. But I want to run down some of these other ideas that I do, and this is all from the website, teachmetotalk.com. And the title of this article is Help My Child Won't Imitate Words, Begin with Imitating Words and Gestures. And you can find that in the expressive language section. But other things that you might do are even starting with a big gross motor movement, like having them imitate you jumping or shaking your head like you're going to just tease them and tell them, no, 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 and shake your head real big. Remember that little guy that we had that... He did that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
That's a good one, too. Kids think that one's pretty funny. Another thing I might try is smacking my lips or making a kissing sound, the big, you know, kids think that's funny, and sometimes we'll try to imitate that. You could even do clicking your tongue, yawning, holding your arms up over your head, stomping your feet, any movement that might get their attention and cause them to want to try to imitate you. And the thing that you're doing with that is really turning that into a back-and-forth turn-taking opportunity so that they can learn to do it through there. And I think I always go there. If I have started with a kid who, for whatever reason, can't sign yet and they're not getting those initial signs that we do that we've talked about the past couple of weeks that I swore I wasn't going to talk about today, but if they start the beginnings and look like signing is going to be too hard, I always back up and start to try to get them to imitate some gestures first because I think that imitation piece is so critical.
Sometimes I have good luck with using things in, I guess, what you'd call an inappropriate way, like if I have the nesting cans and I put one on like a hat. A lot of those kind of goofy things that you're really not necessarily supposed to do with it, they lie.
Right, right.
Yeah. Taking the little plastic hammer and hitting your knee instead of the ball or something that they seem to gravitate towards, oh, that's goofy and silly and funny. I'll try that or be more at least make some effort towards trying to do it. Well, you always emphasize, Laura, keep it playful, keep it goofy, keep it silly. And
Right. Sometimes
doing what they don't expect is a way to get them to pay more attention and try a little harder to do it with you.
I think so, too. And one thing I do when I'm doing things like hitting my knee with the hammer or something like that, I try to put a little sound effect with that. And hopefully they'll not only hit their little knees or whatever goofy thing we've done and then put a little, ouch or whoa or some little exclamatory word there with it so that, again, that it's a little bit of a surprise so that it's just novel enough to make them want to try that. What are some other goofy little words you use like that, Kate?
I remember our little guy who one of the first things was ow, and then he liked it, and if he barely touched himself, he'd say ow, like
yeah.
He really was dying. It was hilarious. Go ahead.
Well, that reminds me with that little guy, the other thing he did is he would so imitate how you laughed. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can always see him doing that.
Do I look that goofy? And then I think, oh, I must be close, or he wouldn't do it that way. I'm big on boom. I get a lot of kids, they like that one because it's so easy for them to pop out early on.
Right.
I don't use this one much, but our friend Melanie, who's a speech therapist, not local anymore, but a good speech therapist, she used ta-da a lot. And I've seen some kids do that. You know, sometimes they don't really get ta-da, but they go, ta-da! And she's put her hands up just in the air, kind of like, ta-da!
I think that would be a great way to get a D. For kids that can't get that early D, I think that would be a great way to do that. I'm going to write that down.
I use squish a fair amount. Which isn't so easy to say, but they come close. You know, you can tell they're trying to say it with, like, that popper ball and anything that's squishy. I really exaggerate that and goofy and ooh a lot. And I use yuck a lot, too.
Me, too.
Yeah, and I get a lot of kids with yuck.
Yeah, and I do that kind of in sequence. Yuck, 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 yuck.
Uh-huh.
And kids will try that. And, again, we don't really care if they don't hit all those sounds in there, if they're not getting the Y or they're not getting that final K on the end. But, you know, you'll hear them start to do that. Ah, 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 and you can tell that that's what they're doing. Our other one word that sounds like this that I know you use that I do, too, is stuck.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
They love
yeah.
that. They'll pop that out before they even know they said it, you know? Don't
yeah,
you have kids
yeah.
who really aren't saying much of anything, but they say, stuck. Yep.
Right, yeah.
And I use sign with that a lot.
I do, too.
No signs, but, you know.
The sign for that is you use your index finger and your middle finger, and you put it on your neck like you're stabbing yourself with a fork. And, again, kids will do that sign a lot, too. Parents don't always like that sign, but I think it's great. And it's real functional because when you're playing, things get stuck all the time. Don't you think so?
Oh, absolutely, especially when you're one or two and you don't necessarily move your hands the way you'd like to, but you have the idea and they're frustrated and they're telling you, it's stuck. Of course, we're always modeling for them. It's stuck. But, yeah, that's a good one. That's early on, too. I use, you know, sometimes I use them and I don't even think about it. But then child starts doing it and I think, oh, yeah, I do say. Here's another one of my recent ones. Oh, man.
That's Diego or Dora. Yeah.
I get quite a few kids to try and say that one, which, once I started using it, just kind of became automatic. But then when a kid starts it, I think it's funny. And they tend to, too. They think it makes them sound cool.
Yeah. That's a funny one. I know we use uh-oh. I use whoops sometimes. I have moms sometimes that will say that one
more than
they
do. I forgot we. I use we for sliding and swinging and lying.
Any movement.
And
yeah.
Wee! And even if they just get that long E sign found out, who cares? That's great.
Yeah, I think that's good. Another one that I do all the time, and I think it's on the DVD, Teach Me to Talk, the DVD, that
Oh, yeah.
I use that a lot, and a lot of kids can do that one. That's sometimes the first even hint that a kid might be trying to imitate me with a real sound.
I learned that one from you, Laura, and it is because it's just the kind of obvious with food, like, and if you really make it goofy, they just think it's funny and cute, too. So they really try hard to get that. Yeah, that's a good early one. Mm-hmm.
And I try to shake my shoulders when I do it, and sometimes I can see, and I love it because usually their mouths are closed or their lips are together because they're chewing. And so it's a perfect time to introduce that sound then because physiologically they're ready to try to do that sound. So, and it is kind of less pressure to do it in that situation than if you were trying to do it even in a play situation because they've already gotten what they want. They're not having a request or anything. It's truly kind of the after effect of that activity. So that's a good one that I get a lot.
Yeah, now we wouldn't use that with, like, spinach. It would be more cheese balls or
M&M's. I'm thinking cookies.
Teddy grams. You know, we don't really use that with vegetables. Yeah, it's got to be something really good.
Yeah, that's gonna make it worth their while. Another one that I do all the time is boo. Don't you play peekaboo with kids?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and instead of doing peekaboo, I tell parents this all the time. There is no chance they're going to get out that whole peekaboo. Just stick with boo because that's going to be easier for them to do.
And that, if they're engaged in playing the game at all, lots of times that kind of pops out of them before they really. You've just paired it with the reveal yourself or pop out from behind the couch or whatever it is so many times that when they go to do it, they're saying boo before they even realize it popped out. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I think that's a real good one. I have a little girl right now that's been adopted from Korea, and in Korea they say gaku instead of boo, and she learned that from her foster parents. And she is a kid that says, she hardly does any sounds at the front of her mouth, like the M's, the P's, and the B's, like we normally see. She does lots of those G's and K's. So it's funny when I play with her, I say boo, and yesterday she said ga and gaku, you know, and I thought, oh, that's so funny. She gets the whole intent, but she's already kind of mapped that in and is using her sounds and her word with that. So that's pretty cool. One other thing that I do with kids, if they're not ready to even try some of those exclamatory words, is do kind of that surprise sound, the and I have a fair number of kids that can really do that at the beginning, too. And I try to use it when we're excited or right when I'm about to show them something, really, and that gets their attention.
Yeah, you know, Laura, do you think, I don't know how much detail you want to go into this, but I sometimes when I'm trying to explain to parents what things might work and what generally doesn't work, I kind of talk a little bit about, the shorter it is, better. The more excited it is, the better. And really, the more you emphasize the vowel sound in it, so it's, so you're really hearing the vowel, because a lot of kids who are late talkers can't get those consonant sounds out. Well, they can't get any sounds out. You know, they're going to get the vowel sounds or be able to imitate the vowel sounds. So you really exaggerate those vowel sounds so it's, and don't get hung up on that. I think you mentioned that earlier, but just to really stretch out and elongate the vowel sounds, and they're more likely to be able to try and imitate it.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I just mentioned that.
Oh, no, that's a great point. And, you know, we started talking about this last time, and I'm going to really talk about it today. Using that sing-song pattern really helps children's little brains tune in, especially when they're in that early attention phase, when you might not always have their undivided attention sitting right there with you. And research tells us that using parent ease or using that really sing-songy, high-pitched, melodic voice really does help them tune in. And it certainly does when you're using these play sounds to really emphasize those vowels, do the whole, when you're modeling these things, use your whole sing-songy kind of voice, and it helps them tune in, too. So instead of, you know, have you had parents that you hear them go, uh-oh, and you think, well, no wonder that was a dud. Try, uh-oh, and really emphasize the syllableness of those early words that you're modeling. You can't just say it like you would to another adult. You have to punch it. You have to use, again, the real melodic, sing-songy kind of pattern to make kids want to try that, don't you think?
I call it the Southern thing, but, yeah, it is. And I even, having done this a long time now, sometimes have to remind myself, well, no wonder he won't say it or he's having a harder time, because I slip out of that sometimes.
Right.
Especially when a child comes on a little bit, and then I think, oh, that's great. He's not doing quite as well. I remind myself, oh, yeah. And if you, you know, remind yourself to use it and you're diligent about using it, it really, I don't really understand the mechanics of why it works. I just know it really does work. I, you know, I see it day in and day out. And, yeah, parents have a hard time with that. I think it kind of makes them feel silly. But
I know, but if you, yeah, it really shouldn't. And I tell parents all the time, if you would not be embarrassed that another adult saw you playing this way, you're probably not being fun enough. And kids don't talk like that. And I think that's another thing is parents get, they think, oh, no, he's never going to sound normal, or he's always going to sound like this, or think this is the way we talk. No way does that happen, because once he gets really conversational and has lots of words, just the speed of wanting to talk in sentences takes some of that out. But, you know, when you're really trying to hook a kid at the beginning that's nonverbal, you'll be so much better off using these kinds of strategies. And your other point about not understanding it, that's the great thing about these strategies. You do not have to understand every little scientific reason for these things to work. Just know that the recommendations that we make are based on science. They're based on studies. We have just boiled it way down so that normal moms like all of us can use these strategies at home and really be effective with their kids.
One other one, Laura, I don't know if it's in your literature or not, that I use a lot, and I know you do too, and it's kind of, I mean, it's a word, but I think we use it kind of to narrate actions or things that we're doing trying to get kids to imitate. Both the action and the word is up. I don't know if that's in there, but, and again, what do I exaggerate? So, yeah, there's a P on there, and a lot of kids, it says, you're playing with the balloon, or you're holding them up like a little airplane, and they're enjoying it, and you've modeled it. They're pretty likely to try and approximate or come close on, So, again, you're kind of, you know, it's a word, but you're kind of really using it to describe the action that you're demonstrating or helping them with. So that's just another one. That's a good one.
Oh. It's a good one. I use that, and, you know, I use up when I'm working on kids, when kids have gotten to the point when we're trying to make the transition to phrases, and we're going to talk about this technique called expansion in just a second. But when we're trying to do that, I'll repeat a lot of those words. You know, this is, I was going to say action words. This is really a preposition, but if we think about it at the most basic level, it's like a verb. It's like an action word with up. Or walk. And I've gotten kids to try to sequence lots of those kinds of early, it's kind of a step between single words and phrases because they're doing a repetitive action, and sometimes they'll do that repetitive word again without even realizing that they're working on phrases or working on that in-between step to phrases. All right, you still there?
Yeah, I was wondering if we're jumping to expansion or we're sticking with the...
No, I want to stick with modeling. I want to talk about something else that you and I talked about yesterday. I just thought about that little kind of in-between step to expansion, but we'll get back to that in a second. I want to talk about how therapists misuse the term modeling and confuse it with the term imitating. So... let's just talk about that for a second. Modeling is saying something that we want children to imitate. So we model a word, the adult does, and then the child imitates it. The child is not modeling the word unless he already knows the word and he's modeling it for a younger child or another child to learn to imitate from him. So when the adult or the person that the model is doing it, it's called modeling. And then when the other person responds, that's called an imitating, and I think people mix that up all the time, and it drives me crazy to hear that misuse.
Therapist. Yeah, we hear therapists, and I don't know why, but it is, and it is commonly misused. Modeling is when you're the one showing what you'd like them to do.
Right, like your favorite show, America's Top Model, right?
Right, there you go. Have they ever watched America's Next Top Model? For heaven's sake. Sorry, and then, we talk about it. Yes, we talk about these subjects pretty much every day.
Every day, yeah. But
every
we did talk
day.
About that yesterday. Because I heard a therapist misuse it in the meeting. And again, it's not a huge mistake, but I just want parents to understand the difference. You model, your child imitates. Okay, that was good. One other thing that I do with getting kids back to imitation before they might be ready to imitate words is to imitate play sounds like animal sounds or car and truck sounds, anything that we can do as kind of, again, a sound effect in the course of play. And I know you use animal sounds a lot, don't you, Kate?
Yes, I do.
And again, I think these are so great because when you're making that animal sound, when you're doing a moo or a woof, 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 you're actually using the same consonants and vowels, the same sounds that your children will use eventually to do words. But again, it's kind of an in-between step. It's a fun kind of word to imitate. And sometimes parents ask me, do we count those as real words? I'm always a little torn on that. It is a word because I feel like if I can spell it, it's a word, and I can spell moo, and so I can write that down. And lots of children that I see actually, instead of calling a cow will call a cow a moo.
Oh, yeah. They hang on to that one for a long time, don't they?
Yeah, or a meow when they see a cat. And so I do count them as quote-unquote words if they use it to actually label what the thing is. But as we, you know, I know some speech pathologists say, absolutely not, it's not a word. But again, I feel like if I can spell it and they use it consistently and I recognize it, that I do count it as a word approximation.
Right. Probably.
Okay. One other trick that's in the article, Help My Child Won't Imitate Words, is using a bucket or using a tent or a little playhouse or something that's going to make your voice echo to try to get a kid to try to imitate some early sounds. Kate and I see a little girl right now that isn't very verbal, but we certainly have used her little playhouse to really vocalize with her and try to, at some point, even get her to be aware that we're vocalizing and that we're making noise. So I think that's a great strategy.
Yeah, sometimes, even if you're just yelling or making silly sounds or, like you said, into a bucket, or I've used the elephant toy, which is a battery-operated toy that has a long
plastic nose.
Yeah, that bugs fly out of. But if you take the nose off, there's a fan that's covered and safe inside. And if you put your head down next to that and make sounds, it sounds real funky. And
that's a good idea.
Yeah, they like that one. Or then they sell, you know, at the dollar stores, they sell those little dollar, kind of like a microphone, but it's not battery-operated or anything. It's just like a little echo chamber. They seem to really, and if you watch kids when they're in a situation where there's a lot of echoing, you see them light up like, ooh, that's cool, and it does encourage them to vocalize more. So just, if you can simulate that in your home environment, you're more likely to get them to play with sounds and make more sounds.
I think so, too. I had a little girl with Down syndrome a couple years ago. She's probably four or five. And she would not imitate any new sound or any new word unless we did that darn bucket first. And so her mother started calling that the magic bucket because it really worked for her. I know. And it was just so funny. That's just how she kind of mapped in. Like, okay, that's how I learn it. You say it into the bucket and I have no choice but to try to imitate you. So it was a fun little trick for her. Okay.
You know, Laura, I want to make a quick point. For those parents who happen to be listening, and I hope you are, who are thinking, I tried that, it didn't work. I tried that, it didn't work. I heard that one, it didn't work.
Right.
We really need to emphasize how important it is to do it and do it and do it and do it and try it again and try it at a different point in the day and try it in a different room, but just keep trying, because none of these things are 100%, but a lot of it is just kind of wearing the child down and helping them to become familiar with it. And eventually, you see the twinkle in their eye, and by gum, they do it. But you really have to be persistent with your efforts.
Totally.
Even the simplest of things can be pretty darn hard for a child who doesn't get imitating. But if you do it and do it and do it, eventually they'll get there. So I just want to say, keep trying it.
I know. And I think the thing that is that's easier for us is we do this all day, every day, you know, and it's our job and we get paid to do it. So I don't really mind having to do the same thing 25, 35, 45 times in a row with a kid because, again, I'm there, that's my job, that's what I do. And I've kind of gotten over that initial disappointment when it doesn't work after the first 5 or 10 times. And I know just keep going, keep trying, keep making it fun, and it is eventually going to happen. But I think parents give up way too early. And I've had parents say that to me a lot, is if I tried as hard as you did, he probably would have done it for me. And I think, he would have. That's the whole point here. You have to really try and keep going while keeping it fun, while keeping it kind of in the context of play, not making it a real chore. But just keep pounding at it, and they do eventually do it.
Right.
That's a great point.
I can see why that parents think, well, I tried it and it didn't work, because if kids are typically developing and don't have any language delays, a lot of kids are pretty automatic about it. You know, you clap their hands, they clap their hands. You say woo-hoo, they say woo-woo. It's not really very hard for typically developing kids. They get it. They like it. They enjoy it. Sometimes they even initiate back and forth, you know, exchange of imitations. But kids who are language delayed generally are not imitators. So for them, it's a big deal for them to get that piece and to learn to enjoy that piece. So, you know, for those parents, you really have to really attach to
parents. Yeah, I think we're losing you. You're sounding a little bit muffled. Are you still there? Kate? Oh, I think she must have driven through a down spot where she can't get service. Let me go out and go ahead and give out our number again. It's a toll-free call, area code 718-766-4332, 718-766-4332, and we would love to hear your questions today. If you have any questions at all about your toddler or preschool child who's learning to communicate, we'd love to hear from you. Okay. We've talked a little bit about imitating. Now let's go back and kind of finish up modeling. And I've talked about this before, but I think the point bears repeating again. You've got to simplify your language when you're trying to get your child to learn to imitate words. You can't talk in really long paragraphs with complex sentence structures all day. Children do need to hear that kind of speech, but when you're teaching them to talk, you really need to use lots of single words and, again, lots of those fun words to try to make them want to imitate what you're saying. Okay, so we've talked about modeling in an effective way as an effective way to get your kids to learn how to talk. And again, let me say this, if I haven't already, all the strategies that we're talking about today can be found on our website at teachmetotalk.com. And on the DVD, Teach Me to Talk, which you can also order at our website. If you're a kind of visual learner and you think, Laura, you know, all these tricks you and Kate are talking about, I've tried that. You might even have a speech therapist that's tried that. Sometimes you just need to see somebody else do those techniques. And on the DVD, I have, close to 20 different kids that I use all the strategies that we talked about last week and then the strategies we're finishing up today. And you can see examples of that, and there are children at all different developmental levels, all different kinds of issues. Most of them are little clients on my caseload, but, again, you can see those techniques in action. All right, I think Kate's back with us now. You there,
I'm back.
Kate?
Yeah, I was.
Okay, good.
There's connection.
You still sound a little bit muffled, so if we lose you again, just keep trying to just call back if you do. You know, and I wanted to say this, too. Kate and I are always going to be in different places when we do the show. Someone asked me one time if we had fun when we were doing this together. We are never together to do this. I call from my house. She calls from wherever she is.
Wherever, yeah.
Yeah. And so we're always in separate places. So I think that's funny that people thought we were together. And actually, we talk on the phone all day, every day. So it very much simulates our normal life and our normal conversation. So just wanted to add that point in. All right, we've talked about modeling today. Let's move on and talk a little bit about choices. I give kids choices all day when I work with them with what they want to do, and there are two main reasons that I do it. First of all, it gives a child power, and it lets him feel like he's got some sense of control. And for all of the floor time folks, the people who really read Dr. Stanley Greenspan's writings about following a child's lead, that's a great way to make them think you're following their lead, is to give them a choice, give them a choice between two things that you would normally want them to do, or two things that are acceptable to you. So choices are something I use all the time. And then I think the other great thing about choices is that it really does require a child to respond. And so that's another reason that I do that. You don't let them just kind of pick the toy and hoard it over by themselves. You know, you're going to hold up two different toys. And in that choice that you're giving them, even if they can't say it, if they can reach for it, if they can look at it, if they could point to it, all of those things are early responses. And you're shaping their communication when you're requiring them to respond in that situation. Kate, this is where I thought you would say something.
I shook my head. Couldn't you hear me?
No.
I would think, that's a good point, Laura. Yeah, you know, I think you do probably a better job of this than I do. I do give choices, but when I watched you filming your first video, Teach Me to Talk, one of the things that I was taken by was how many choices you really give. I think I give them, but you break it down. Break it every. I know you wrote about this on the website about having things in bags and using things with a lot of pieces. And I do those things, but I don't think, I think I've tried, I've gotten a little better about it since I saw you in action. But, you know, whether it be the baby doll with all the different accessories and your constant, do they want to drink from a cup or a bottle? Do they, you know, all the things that they like, and kids love those accessories that make it real and, you know,
relevant.
And I do it, but I think I've learned by watching you, I thought, wow, she really gives a lot of choices.
I do it, but and I might have, like, let's talk about the baby doll example. If I have my bag of babies, I don't just have one baby. I have two or three babies, and I'll say, you know, and first you start with the babies. Are we going to play babies or are we going to do a puzzle? And then they sign or say or point or somehow indicate baby. And then it's not, we don't just take out the babies and play. I ask, do we need, are we going to leave the bag open or closed? And then they have to open the bag to get the babies. And then I say, do you want the big baby or the little baby? And again, every single thing, before they get one darn thing, they have to respond. And again, I think the best way to set that up, instead of saying, tell me, which I do all the time, is really giving them a choice, because it does, again, make them feel like they have some power. And it leads itself to vocalizing or to signing, I think, a little more naturally than just constantly prompting or cueing. I'm trying to decide if there are, think if there's a clip about choices on the website, a video clip of that from the DVD. There may not be. But, again, that is a super effective way. And if there are, if you have a kid who has maybe, you know, 10, 15, 20 words, and you want to think, how can I get him to be a little bit more spontaneous with me? Using choices is a good way to do it, because, again, you're setting up a more natural situation for them to use their words than just totally requesting that one thing. Does that make sense?
It does to me. Before I got cut off, Laura, I was saying give the call-in number. Did you do that?
I did that the whole time you were gone. I said it about 15 or 20 times.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Good.
No, I did say
it a couple
times.
Use that. We need a caller.
I know. No callers today. But it's the call-in number is 718-766-4332. It is a toll-free call, and we would love to hear from you if you're listening live. It's Friday, August 22nd, 1:37. So we have 22 minutes left with the show and plenty of time to answer any question. I wish the folks who didn't wait on us last week, who had to hang up because we took so long, would give us another try this week. All right, so back to the choices. With the baby dolls, I said, you know, we would choose between, first of all, if we were going to play baby dolls and another thing, and then we would pick if we were going to open or close the bag. We would pick if we were going to get the big or the little baby, and I think you gave the example, does she want milk or juice, or does she want a cup or a bottle? And again, if they pick cup, then you say, does she want the blue cup or the yellow cup? You just keep those choices going, 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 so that, again, they may have to make 35 different choices for one little play activity, and you've gotten 35 different words or 35 word attempts. And I think it does really increase the number of words or the number of verbalizations that you might get in a limited amount of time when you do that. And, again, it's so part of the routine that kids sometimes, I don't even think, realize they're doing it. You keep it pretty fast-paced. You keep it fun. You keep it with what they know they want to do, and it is great. We have a caller.
Yay!
I know. Okay, let's get them on. Hi.
Hello.
Tell us who you are.
Hi, my name is Missy, and I'm calling from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Missy.
Hi,
so
Missy.
Glad to have you on the show.
Oh, well, I was listening, and I just found your radio show today on your website. I recently found your website. And I love it. And I'm actually an early interventionist in Pennsylvania.
Wow, yay.
Oh, great.
And I'm like, hooray, a website that focuses on toddlers, children under three.
There's
not a lot
of information about that. There's really not.
No, there's not.
You know, I can find more things about preschoolers or about school-age children, but
there
wasn't a site. I could never give parents a site. So after talking about it for 5 or 6 years, I finally just did it.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful. I was excited. I'm like, here's my life's work on a website with articles,
yeah.
And it makes me feel like I'm now out there all by myself, like a crazy woman giving families these ideas.
I know.
Yeah.
It does feel good to be validated. And then
it
I really wanted to have it all in one spot and it not be all about theory, but
it
really
is.
Be
yeah.
about real-life ideas and real-life things that you can do every day at home from a therapist perspective and from a parent perspective as well.
Yes, and I think some of the recommendations we tend to make for toddlers, on one hand, the parents aren't often doing them, but on the other hand, they seem almost too obvious to parents.
Right.
That they somewhat doubt them, that it seems too simple.
Right.
Right.
But so it's nice. I've been handing out the website, and I've been copying
Yay.
Off some articles and sharing it with families, and now I think the radio show is even more fabulous.
Oh, well, I'm so glad. I'm so glad you called. Now, did
yeah.
you have a question, or were you just going to
Well, just a
talk
thought,
about
something
okay.
that kind of came across my plate recently,
okay.
working with a very population in early intervention. One of my more recent evaluations was a two-year-old boy who's being considered for a diagnosis of autism.
Mm-hmm.
However, he had really taken off learning sign language, which kind of went against what I had typically seen with some of the kids where, you know, you tend to go to the picture communication, I think, quite
right.
often with those kids.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting, and I was just maybe looking for some feedback about your experience with that and using the signs.
I've had lots of kids on the spectrum turn out to be really good signers, haven't you, Kate?
Yeah, I was going to ask Missy if she's familiar with the work. Is it Vincent Carbone, Laura, that we saw? He's out of Pittsburgh. I think
okay, I'm sorry. Could you say the name again?
I think it's Vincent Carbone is the last name. We saw him speak at a speech and hearing conference in Kentucky some number of years ago.
Okay.
With spectrum kids, and he's an advocate of using sign language with them.
Okay.
Yeah, I've certainly had kids who were on the spectrum, or I believed them to be, and they weren't. Signers, but then I've had those who ended up being very good signers. So I don't think
okay.
that
you know.
Is,
and the, I do think well. And the other now I've lost her name. The other person that uses lots of signs is a speech pathologist with kids with autism, kids on the autistic spectrum. Is Tamara Casper. And she
okay.
does a lot of work with Nancy Kaufman, who's a speech pathologist who specializes in apraxia. But she's got a great tool. It's called, they call it See and Say with K and K, which I think is so cute. That
oh,
would be
yeah.
okay,
the kind
yeah,
of
it is.
Name that Kate and I would come up with. But it's, she uses lots of signs of those children, and she pairs those with word cards because kids on the spectrum usually are. So, or
right.
Not word cards, I'm sorry.
Well, visual
picture
learners,
cards.
Right. It's
yeah,
pick up
yeah.
fully, I think, on letters and word recognition, yeah.
Right, right. And so they kind of use that. They use
oh,
the
that's
pictures
a great idea.
With the signs. And I haven't bought those. I haven't bought that because I think it's pretty I think it's a great idea, but it's always think, gosh, I can do that without that tool. I'm just giving
right.
you the idea. I can make that work.
Yeah.
But it's a great tool. If you do you use signs with your other kids, Missy? So you're pretty okay with using sign language?
Yes, definitely.
Already?
Yes.
Yeah.
Fortunately,
yeah.
I've taken just some shorter classes, and for most of the children under three I work with, I find that I can manage pretty well with
yeah, me too.
The knowledge that I have.
Yeah, me too. And so I wanted to say that that's a great tool if any parent is really thinking, okay, my kid is a real visual learner, but I want to use signs, but I'm not sure how to use those or
yes.
That
and
would
usually,
be a good tool to use.
I find that most parents, even if they hesitate initially, once they do see a video or start learning a couple, it's not long before they're on board with it because
oh, yeah.
I always try to encourage them that sign language is really not a foreign language, that signs
yeah.
make sense. They're logical usually, so that makes them easy to remember. And, you know, if your child picks up on them and uses them regularly, you'll start learning them just as quickly.
Absolutely.
So, and I also see often the action of the signs, I think, stimulates vocalization.
Absolutely.
I think there's such that
yeah.
strong
Absolutely.
Connection between movement and vocalizations for toddlers.
Yes.
We're definitely on the same page there, Missy. No doubt
yeah.
about it.
Totally, totally. But Kate was talking about Dr. Carbone, and he is
uh-huh.
in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
But he's kind of I don't want to say an ABA guy, but similar to that pretty structured approach in using using signs with kids. And he's not a speech person. He's I think he really is an ABA guy, but look him up because he
is a psychologist. Yeah, he may be a psychologist.
I think he is too.
Good, though.
But he uses signs with kids with autism, too. And I think sometimes just our training, we would, just from our training, we would think, okay, I need to be more visual with this kid, but not necessarily so. And I really like using signs better than pictures because, one, it's portable, and, two, because of what you hit on before, that movement, vocalization, connection.
Right,
and I think it really stimulates speech to do that. So that's not necessarily out of the norm. Me and for how I think about it. So, yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. It's not the population I work with most often.
Right.
But the couple of children that I have had that have, you know, been thought to be on the spectrum or potentially getting a diagnosis, you know, usually it took a while till they got a couple signs, but this child has really just taken off quickly with it. So.
Right. I actually researched that very topic when I was in grad school, and I got to choose a topic I was interested in, and I researched which was more effective with autistic kids, signing or picture exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And what I came up with, the best answer was, they're about the same. It really depends on the kid.
Right. Well, that's good. And I think I have to keep a more open mind about that and not rule it out, see it as a possibility for them.
I think so, too. And sometimes, you know, if I can't get a kid to use signs, I might go kind of back up in my mind and start with pictures.
Uh-huh.
But then I almost always keep doing signs with kids, even after they're talking, you know, because I, you know, I'm pretty think about, okay, let me use every way that I can to make language make sense for this kid. And I think signing does that really, really well. Thanks so much for calling today, Missy.
Yes,
we love hearing from you.
Thank you, and I'll continue to spread the word.
Okay,
thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
That was great to hear from one of your people, Kate.
That was good. I guess she must have been, she called herself an early interventionist. I guess that is the general term for teachers or people who,
I think it is. I think, I think she's the that's what they call the DI in other states.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, that was good. I'm glad we got to talk about that today with, you know, and I think that's so important not to just see a diagnosis that a kid has and think, okay, these are the strategies that I'm going to try and kind of rule out something that you might otherwise think that might be so successful for a kid just kind of based on his diagnosis.
Right. Yeah, I usually start with signs like you, Laura, but if that leads me nowhere, we're making little progress, then sometimes I'll do the same thing, back them up to pictures, and then pictures can be a hassle, though, because families tend to lose them, and the kids like to play with them, and you're constantly making them, and so if signs work, they're a good choice.
They are, but I do have some kids that weren't able to do that, and we did back up and use pictures, and eventually, you know, we're able to use signs and words. And for those parents who might not know, Kate used the term for that before, the picture exchange communication system. We've got an article about that on the website at teachmetotalk.com. It's called PECS. That's how all your therapists will refer to it. And, again, it stands for Picture Exchange Communication System. It was originally designed by a speech pathologist and a psychologist. Again, originally to teach autistic kids how to communicate with the theory, I've got to do something to get something. So they came up with this whole great approach. It has, I think, 6 different phases. You start out just trading a picture card for a highly preferred item that you want. And, again, there's a really in-depth article about that on the website if you want to take another look at that and get more information about that. But I do use pictures with kids that I can't get to communicate with me any other way, or if it looks like they might be nonverbal for a while, or if motor problems are really preventing them from being able to sign, or again, it's kind of one of my last ditch efforts where I feel like, okay, I've done everything I know how to do. Let's break out these pictures and see if we can get some communication going with that.
Yeah, and sometimes something to think about is, I've had some kids that I thought, oh, they might be a good candidate for pictures. And those kids, at least as I've identified them, they tend to be kids who either really like books or really attend to patterns and things, or, you know, they recognize not necessarily what a letter is, but you see them making visual comparisons, or their parents say, oh, yes, he sees the moon on this page in the book, and then the next page he sees it again, and he notices it, and he's very...
And he flips,
you know,
back and forth between the two pages. Yeah.
Right. And they, those kids, it's obvious, well, it's maybe not obvious, but it may be obvious, or you may recognize over time that, yeah, they see the patterns. That really gets them. That means something to them. And sometimes the words don't mean so much, and they're good... Laura?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know if it went up. So they may be good candidates for the pictures. And it might be a short-term thing that you use to help move them along, maybe to words, maybe to signs, maybe to both. But it can be a good first or early strategy. So
yeah, it can. And, that system has lots of good research to back it up. And now in early intervention, we're using, and in preschools everywhere, are using pictures not only to help kids learn to communicate, but just as a visual way to help them get through their day and transition between activity to activity. And again, there's tons of research to support that. So look that up on the site if you need more information about that, Picture Exchange Communication System, or PECS. All right, let's go back to what we were talking about before. We're trying to get through these six strategies that we introduced last week. We've talked about playfulness. We've talked about using sign language, which is going to come up on, I think, every show we're going to do from now until the end of time. What do you think?
It seems yeah. to keep coming back. Yeah, it's just such a useful way to,
I know,
to get
it really
where you want to go. And it's like the caller said, a lot of times parents are really resistant to that because they think, I want my Johnny to talk. I don't, and of course we all do, and that's the desired end result. But we just know, and I always say, it's a stopgap measure. It's a means to an end. We are not teaching them to be signers. We really have verbal communication as our desired outcome,
goal.
But it gets them there faster. So
it totally does. Okay, and then we spent some time talking about modeling was our strategy that we. I need a speech therapist today. Strategy. At the beginning, we talked about modeling, and by that we mean teaching your kids to imitate. And if we don't imitate first with words, we back up and have them imitate gestures or movements or something that they can do. And then we moved on. Are you there?
I'm there. I think I pushed a button. Sorry.
Okay. And then we moved on to talking about choices, and I think we'll finish up today by talking about withholding for a little bit. Last time on the show, we had a caller that talked about withholding. I think she had gotten the DVD, and she was talking about how much she liked the withholding section because I gave some real specific criteria to use for withholding with toddlers to make that more effective. So I want to talk about that again. I know you use withholding too, Kate.
I do.
But
mm-hmm.
I think the most important thing is when I went to a seminar, and it may have been at the I don't even remember where I heard it. It may have been Tamara Casper, the lady that I mentioned before, and she talked about...
I think it was, Lark, because I remember you told me about it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it was that she based it that this information on a study, and I believe it was done by the National Institutes of Health, NIH. They do a ton of research, and their study said that when you're going to withhold something, or you're going to give your child an opportunity to say it or sign it before he gets it, the 3 to 5 times is the most that you should ever withhold something from a kid while you're requiring that response. And that after that 5th time, there was no real demonstration of any learning going on. So that means you're not really supposed to say, you know, hold the sippy cup up, shake it, and say, you have to tell mommy milk or you can't have it, milk, milk, and just keep on and on and on for 25 times before you give it to them or not give it to them at all. Which is how I think some therapists who, I just can't even believe that they would think that was even an option, but really using that 3 to 5 time indicator for me has been so good because then I feel like, okay, science really backs this up. I'm not going to try with a kid Or even if he's crying after two times, I'm going to go ahead and give it to him so that we can get happy again and move on. And I think the fear is that he thinks parents or bad therapists, therapists who aren't knowledgeable about this research, really think, okay, I can't reward it because then he's going to think that he can just cry or think he can get frustrated. Well, duh, he's going to cry and get frustrated anyway, regardless of whether you give him that or not. I don't think the whole rewarding piece really has anything to do with this. Do you?
No, and I think that's a, I hear that via parents that the speech therapist, not you, of course, but whatever speech therapist has told the parents, don't give it to them unless they say it. And they really kind of blame the parents.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't think that late talkers are at all created by, or a parent has, short of not talking to your child at all, I guess that would generate a late talker. But short of that, I've heard therapists, I have literally heard them say this, well, no wonder he doesn't talk. You give him everything he wants. Well, I mean,
yeah.
Don't we all give our kids everything they want when they're babies? You know, that's kind of a parent's job.
Yeah, if you're a caring, nurturing mom and dad, you're going to do that anyway. We have to do that when they're infants, and it does carry on. But I don't ever think it's a parent's fault either, and I do cringe when I hear that other therapists have said that at meetings. Thank goodness I don't have to hear bad speech therapists say that, since I'm usually the only one there, and I'm not saying that kind of junk to parents. So I do hate it, and I think,
oh, that's horrible. You blamed this good mommy for a child who's late not talking because she needs the child's need. I want to say,
right,
keep up the good work. Keep doing
absolutely
what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, let me give you a big hug. Yeah.
Right. That this withholding, which is not, say it, you don't get it. It's being playful and it's modeling the one simple word you'd like for them to pop out, but it's not, I'm not going to give it to you unless you say it. So either you say ball or, you know, whatever it is, chip, then you don't get it. And they really do tell parents that. It's really sad, I think. But
I know.
If you've heard that from your
sad
therapist, if you've heard it, don't believe it. It is not true.
It is not true.
It's not true. Yeah, just forget that little juicy
information.
You didn't deserve it. Yeah. So,
right, and
anyway,
you can go on the website. An article on the website that talks about that is called A Little Frustration Can Go a Long Way, and it's about using sabotage and using withholding and ways to do that. And, again, these are the ways that are supported by research and by science. This isn't just Kate and me making this stuff up. This is what real experts have come up with through research that they duplicated in studies. So you can be confident that this is correct information. All right, the last technique, I don't think we're even going to talk about it today. I talked about it a little bit before, expansion. We're going to save that for next week's show because expansion is a great strategy if you have a child who is already at that 35 to 50 word level and you're ready to move on to phrases. I have lots and lots of good ideas to share with you with a technique called expansion. So we'll talk about that next week. I can't believe we got through another whole hour. That went fast.
Yeah.
Really, really fast.
Getting easier and easier. And
it is.
But we still want you to call in. So
I know.
You're listening.
Next
listening
week.
To
and
us
it's
recorded. Call in
right
next week. Go ahead, Mike.
And the call-in number is the same from week to week. So write this call-in number down, 718-766-4332. Kate and I are always on Fridays at 1 o'clock, and even long distance traveling does not keep us from bringing our show to you, since Kate has
or
been gone the past.
Or shopping at the outlet mall, for that matter.
Is that what you're doing now?
Yep, Banana Republic.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so please call us next week. And I did want to say one more thing. If for any listener who is in or near New Jersey, be on the lookout for an article in the Star Ledger about attention-deprived babies and moms who are overusing their cell phones during what used to be communication time for moms and kids. I had a reporter call me about an article I had on the website there, again called Attention-Deprived Babies on our website, and I was interviewed for that article, so be on the lookout for that, and hopefully we'll get a link for that posted on the website too so you can read the whole thing. That'll,
oh, cool.
That was fun for me. I know. That was
yeah,
fun.
Cool.
All right. Well, I think we have about 20 more seconds left, and I just want to thank everybody for listening today. And if you didn't get to listen with us live today, please join us next Friday. We love your calls. This is what makes us want to do this show, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye, Kate.
Okay, bye.
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 It's just crazy.